Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Health Matters Health Caucus Show. We're having a raucous caucus here in the studio, thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. And with me to caucus over caucuses is the UK Manager of Communications Infrastructure, the state's techno guru, Rick Phillips, to explain our web presence before the mud starts slinging.
Well, just so you know, I brought my coin in case we have to settle this.
In case we have to settle matters. Of national importance, we might need a coin.
And I think I have the stamina to go through six in a row if need be. But that saying,
yep.
You can get the audio of the shows at wmky.org. That is Moorhead State Public Radio's website. Yeah, you got to navigate through the menus and you got to find Health Matters. And, you know, I'm sure that Moorhead State Public Radio would like it if you went to some of their other fine radio shows, websites. But find Health Matters. Go to it. See that list of shows. The more recent ones are there. There's a summary. There's a link to the audio. There's a link to the podcast in case you really like it and you want it delivered automatically to you. Remember, that's going to show up about 4 days after we go live with the show. So once the show first airs, then about 4 days later, you'll see that show up on the podcast. After you've listened to the show, jump on over to Facebook. That is where you can interact with the show. And we do mean interact. We like comments. We like feedback. We like posts. We post. We sometimes tell you what's going on, both from a research standpoint, from a news standpoint, from an opinion standpoint. You just never know. The one way to know, though, is to actually ask. So jump over to facebook.com/HMRadioShow and like our fan page on Facebook. And are you ready to go?
Yeah.
Would you like to flip a coin, whether you go first or whether I go first?
No, I was just thinking, I hadn't said anything to Bill about his post on our Facebook page. And Bill, I do appreciate it. We've been kind of run busy lately. And
you're back in the country.
Yeah, that's true. It's been some interesting times here. One announcement before we get started. The Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, based at the UK College of Public Health, is having an open house on Thursday, February 11th for adults older than 50. You 49-year-olds?
Yeah.
Well, the studio is now divided into Osher eligible and Osher non-eligible.
Heads you're it, tails I'm not.
That's right. Wrong side of the coin there, huh? These are people who are passionate about learning at every stage of their life, particularly if they're older than 50. It's from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the Moorhead United Methodist Church in their Wesley Hall. That's 227 West Main Street in Moorhead. So if you're an adult over age 50 who is passionate about learning and you don't have anything to do at 1 p.m. on a Thursday...
Which basically means you're getting ready for dinner, right?
Yeah. It's a good thing. We make fun of absolutely everything, whether it's good or not, and this is a good thing. You can meet and talk with instructors, learn about courses during the spring semester, and you can register. The annual fee is $25, but some classes may charge additional fees, and there are interest groups and day trips and so forth. The idea is to put together a community of learners, and we think that's a good thing, even though it's Thursday at 1 p.m. That's February 11th, 1 p.m., Moorhead United Methodist Church, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute is having their sign up.
So what you got this week?
I've got a sponsor.
Do we have a sponsor?
Yep. And
nothing to do with coins.
No, it's actually, we're repeating our sponsor, Cough Management. Let's nail that coughing before it gets worse. The causes of chronic cough. This is the time of year when people have that chronic cough.
Is it? Yeah, because of the cold weather, because of the being indoors all the time.
Yeah, actually, you know, we went through earlier this week, we went through that period of very warm weather, and I have one of my medical students actually felt like he picked up some allergies, and I don't know exactly where it came from, but he was having more allergic symptoms, but for whatever reason.
Tony, yeah, I mean, there were days where you did not need a coat on the first, was second, whatever it is, whatever day it was we were doing that.
Yeah.
It was sometime in early February.
Yeah. And
did not need a coat.
Absolutely amazing.
You could have played golf that day.
Unsettling to me, because I am a person who thinks that the earth is getting warmer, and anytime I see things that are record-breaking, it concerns me.
But in that same line, 7 days prior, you had to deal with 10 inches of snow at your house.
Right, yeah. So that's the part that worries me, because I think this warm weather brings moisture up and farther north, and I think especially in the Northeast, I think record snowfalls are going to, in fact, be pretty much broken on a regular basis. But back to coughing, since we mentioned it. Yeah, 3 weeks. If you're lasting more than 3 weeks, you're a non-smoker, you've had a cough that lasts more than 3 weeks, here's your top four. Upper airway cough syndrome. We used to call it post-nasal drip. This is sinus problems, allergies, and so forth. Asthma's number two. A non-asthmatic bronchitis, an infection of the bronchial tubes. I'm sorry. Not an infection, but an irritation of the bronchial tubes, not necessarily a bacteria, not treated with antibiotics. And then finally, acid reflux, which can irritate the voice box and lead to a cough. That's our top four causes. We're going to talk about treatment in our next fractional portion. Our sponsor, Cough Management. Let's nail that coughing before it gets worse. Now, the reason I abbreviated the sponsor for the first fractional portion is I am, as
tired.
Usual, I'm
tired.
Irritated with the Iowa caucuses.
Oh, I thought you were just ill-prepared.
As usual. Well, sure, there's that. That's why we're talking about caucuses on a health show, is because, gee, I mean, what's the health stuff? But seriously.
Well, frankly, it was more interesting. Not
in
necessarily
case,
the outcomes, but the process.
Health Matters, Iowa caucuses recommendation. Recommendation number
one. Can you
one.
Imagine if medicine were diagnosed via caucuses? Can you imagine? Does he have cancer? Flip the coin.
Right. It's a
six coin flips. Yep, he's got it.
Okay, it's a discussion. And I found, first of all, you know I
is
like
words.
Is that
any way to solve things?
I think that's my all right. So we're skipping back and forth. But first of all, let me talk to you about caucuses. It's a it's an American word, which is kind of neat. First used in New England. It's either from the Algonquin word caucasal, which is a counselor or advisor, or, and you'll love this, it's from the Greek word drinking cup, because there was a drinking club called the Caucus Club of Boston in the 1760s. So either it comes from a wise elderly advisor or basically a tankard.
Either one may have valuable words.
Yeah, where do you get your advice? A wise advisor or a beer mug? Either way, you're caucusing, which means discussing. So I understand it was an Iowa discussion, but we make so much out of it. And frankly, Iowa, if you want to be a major part of choosing the president, you're going to have to figure out how to record your votes.
Really?
They
have to get that serious about it?
Yes, because they were just, they did roll calls, and when Martin O'Malley didn't get enough votes to have delegates, they dropped him out, and everybody changed their votes. And you mentioned the coin flips. This is not the way that you record the intent of a state, the very first state to vote on
Does it say we don't care about the president?
Well, it says that there's, you know, this is worse than the Florida hanging chads, honestly.
Yeah, I'm sorry, my intent isn't to offend Iowans. That's not my intent, but it is, if you're not from there, it seems very foreign.
It's bizarre. Get some voting machines and record the votes, and let's get some numbers on this thing, okay?
I mean, let's take a hit, right?
Yeah. Not just it appears that Iowa is inclining toward the winner, but rather let's see what the votes are. Second, shame.
It's going to make me run out, and that's what I'm going to believe those caucuses. I think I'm going to vote for that.
Second, shame.
You know what? I'm going to stand in the voting booth and flip a coin.
That's what we do anyway. Shame on the Democratic Party. Shame on the news media for declaring Hillary Clinton the winner. 49.9% to 49.6%. That was a dead heat. Statistically, that's a dead heat. If I have two medicines and one cures you 49.9% of the time and one cures you 49.6% of the time, I am not going to tell you one of them's better than the other. That, and especially six coin flips in a row gets you 0.3% in the votes. No, I'm sorry. That was a dead heat. Nobody won that. I'm not necessarily a Hillary supporter or a Bernie Sanders supporter, but you can't call 0.3% a win.
Well, I mean, we're not starting a football game here.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we're trying to elect a president.
Stop flipping coins.
Right.
Get some vote totals in. And if you have a tie, call it a tie.
And I mean, and do they honestly have somebody refereeing that coin toss? Because, I mean, as we saw in the football playoffs a couple weeks ago,
right.
You can flip the coin straight up and it doesn't actually flip.
Did the coin flip?
No, it didn't.
Yeah. And was this a... did we video the coin toss? Do we have monitors? Do we know whether it was heads or tails? There's a lot of things happening in Iowa that I'm not so sure about.
I mean, the law of probability with a coin is how we choose who's going to run for president. Hello, Tony. I think you and I are to have a coin flip. Right? Well, thing is, I don't want to be the host.
Yeah,
but if I did,
what you're thinking
a coin
is,
flip would be a great way.
If Rick gets, and we could have a vote on Facebook. If Rick gets 3/10 of a percent more votes than I do, then it's his show.
No, I don't want to do that. No.
Rather, what do you want? You want to flip a coin for... anyway, let's go. We'll swap. We'll change mics.
I love the fact that you're the host.
I appreciate that. And I do
more importantly,
not,
I love the fact that I'm not.
That's Health Matters take on the Iowa caucuses. Thank God we're not them and they're not us. Best we can do. Another thing that a recent headline, I got time to talk about this, snow shoveling.
It probably killed a bunch of people.
January 25th, 45 snowstorm-related deaths due to that big monster snowstorm that came through. We were talking about more than a dozen people suffered heart attacks while shoveling snow. At least 10 people in the New York City area alone, most over age 60, also reported New Jersey, Maryland, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and D.C. And here's just a random fact, which I really like random facts. Between 1990 and 2006, a 16-year period, 1,600 people died of heart attacks from shoveling snow during that period. So about 100 people a year die of snow shoveling heart attacks.
Right.
People who are at risk, those over age 55, those who have known heart disease or risk factors. The problem with shoveling snow as opposed to other forms of exercise, you can't stop halfway through. You cannot shovel half your driveway and quit. You have to get to the end of the driveway when something other than your health is in charge of your exercise speed, your exercise duration. That's when trouble starts to happen.
And Tony, my tractor decided halfway through that snowstorm it wasn't going to start anymore. Wasn't a battery. Don't know if it's the starter.
You got a dead tractor?
I got a dead tractor. It's dead. And, you know, it's either some neutral safety switches or that's one of the things. I will say one thing. As tractors go, an older tractor is far better than a newer because the older tractors don't have all that safety stuff on it.
Right.
You know, mine's got roll bars and power steering. But, you know, that stuff breaks.
Tell me if you've ever done this. And I'm sorry, we're all over the map this first segment, but that's fine. My dad would put, when he was working on his riding mower, he would put a concrete block on the seat to keep that contact
absolutely
switch down.
See, but in my era, you could just cheat that thing.
You know? Well, Dad didn't know how to cheat it, so he just loaded up cement blocks, and then he went, and you can imagine, if that thing starts, then it's going to take off
right
with a load of cement blocks
right
mowing across the lawn until it hits something. And
yeah, so I mean, it's just one of those. So I spent the...
That's
luckily
a safety feature, by the way. Loading up your mower with
yes,
cement blocks
is
a safety feature.
Mine does not have a weight sensor in the seat to make sure you're sitting, but if it's not in neutral, you can't start it. If any of the PTOs, either the rear or the mid, mm-hmm, is engaged,
you can't start
the engine. And so the glow plugs have to warm up or you can't start the engine. Now, the reason I know this, I ordered a service manual. I do have a little bit of a background in electronics and electricity. I think I can troubleshoot this. I think I know what to do. All I need is some time to do it, and that will be this week.
40 seconds left in the first fractional portion.
And
the
you're not going to have time to get anything off.
I'm
going to make
sure. Finish the first segment.
I am making sure.
The American College of Sports Medicine mentions that on screening before exercise, the key thing, the thing that is the most dangerous is episodic vigorous exertion. That is the most dangerous thing for your heart.
And if you have to have your tractor working for that
right
not to happen.
And if you exercise regularly, I understand, if you exercise regularly, you're fine. But if exercise intermittently, that's when things go bad, and that's the problem with snow shoveling. The problem with Health Matters is we're running out of our first fractional portion. Take a break, recover, and we'll see if we can't stay on topic next time. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Health Matters Caucus Show.
Are we going to have a caucus at some point?
And it's a discussion. That's what we did the first fractional portion.
But we're not
except
deciding
you couldn't
stay
anything on a topic.
At the end, can we flip a coin?
This is our celebration of the Iowa caucuses, and we decided to that's what we're going to do. Our sponsor for the second time, Cough Management. Let's nail that coughing before it gets worse. The causes of chronic cough. A chronic cough is a cough that lasts more than 3 weeks. In a person who is not smoking and not taking what we call an ACE inhibitor. That's a certain type of blood pressure medicine that ends in pril, and it just happens to make people cough about one time in six. If you're not on that blood pressure medicine, if you're not smoking regularly, here are your top four causes of long-term cough. Number one, post-nasal drip, sinus problems, mostly allergies. That's called upper airway cough syndrome. Number two is asthma. Number three is a bronchitis, an irritation of the bronchial tubes, but once again, not infectious. Now, let me point out to you, post-nasal drip, not infectious, unless there might be a bacterial sinusitis. That's not the most common cause of that. Number two, asthma, not infectious. Number three, non-asthmatic bronchitis, not infectious. Number four is acid reflux disease. The acid reflux irritates the upper airway and leads to coughing, also not infectious. So the top four causes of cough, other than a bacterial sinusitis, are not infectious conditions. An antibiotic is not a good idea for a chronic cough, even though we have been trained by our neighbors, by society, by tradition, to always ask for an antibiotic if we have a long-term cough. Here's the treatment. The first generation antihistamines with decongestants, that is the Benadryls and the Tavis and these old sleepy antihistamines, turn out they have some side effects that are nice for coughing. Add pseudoephedrine to them. That's the D in those extended release things, and it's good. Now, Claritin it keeps you clear, but it doesn't do that well for your cough. So Claritin D is very nice once a day, but it's not the best cough antihistamine. The older stuff like Benadryl or Tavis are better for cough than Claritin is. The second thing that the experts say is that guaifenesin, my single favorite medicine, which I don't think it does anything at all. Dextromethorphan, that's the DM. Codeine, if you have an infection, not recommended. If you don't have an infection, the placebo response, if you just take something that looks like a cough syrup, 85% of the time your cough's going to get better anyway. Codeine, no more effective than placebo in adults and children. The European Medicines Agency prohibits use of codeine in kids younger than 12. We think that's a horrible idea, treating a child younger than 12 with codeine. Guaifenesin is FDA approved for cough. I have no idea why. Supposedly, guaifenesin, and that's the stuff that's in plain Robitussin, goes into your stomach, and from there magically irritates your bronchial tubes to make more mucus come out. The mucus gets thinner, and you can cough it out easier. Look it up. I am not making this up. It is a bunch of arm waving. I think there is a rabbit and silk handkerchiefs involved, but in some way or another, this stuff goes to your stomach and helps your cough out. I don't believe it. There's something called benzonatate. That's Tessalon, approved for children older than age 10. Not effective. American Academy of Pediatrics says over-the-counter cough and cold medicines not effective for kids younger than age 6. Just get you an antihistamine, pair it with a decongestant, drink some warm liquids. That's the best thing you can do for these coughs.
Can you just tough it out? Can you just do nothing?
I have not taken, and I'm not trying to make myself out to be Iron Man or anything, I haven't taken a cough medicine probably in 10 years. And I have coughed. You know, I got a little bit of asthma. But
you do kind of hang around a place that has a lot of, colds and various things. I mean, you know, a hospital is a place where, you know, you're in kind of presented with a lot of opportunity.
Right.
For illness.
Honey seems to work for older kids and adults. Warm liquids seem to work and thin things out a little bit. But honestly, don't waste your money on cough medicines. They're no good. Speaking of medicines.
Clearly, you're not taking anything from the cough medicine companies.
No, that's right. We're not going to get
no PAC money for you.
There goes the sponsors. Now, this one, Rick, you're it's about medicine, but I don't want you to go to sleep just yet because I think it's pretty
medicine
good.
Medicine as in drugs?
This is,
I'll be back.
This is Manoj Jain, who has his own blog. He's an infectious disease guy from Memphis, and you can find him on the internet. He's talking about these antibiotics. As an infectious disease guy, he looks at antibiotics and antivirals, and he's just disgusted with it. He says the nightmare of medicine is the absurd price we have to pay for our medicines. And here's what he says, and this is a great way to look at this. Pfizer charges $56 per pill of Zyvox, which treats that methicillin-resistant staph skin infection. $56 per pill. A 10-day treatment, over $1,000. That's the cost of a dozen doctor visits just to take the pill. We've talked about Sovaldi for hepatitis C. $84,000 for a 12-week course. That's the equivalent of a one-month hospital stay. And the travesty, and we'll talk a little bit more about this in a few minutes, Daraprim, which was that pill that cost a few bucks, and Turing Pharmaceuticals bought it out, cornered the market, and raised the price to $750 per pill. Course of treatment, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you could provide health insurance to hundreds of individuals for the money that you have to pay for one pill. He says there's something wrong about this in a market-driven economy. Again, we talk about medicine should be a business. Medicine should not be a business, and it's not right the way we're doing it right now. Now, this is not me. This is Jane talking. He says, over the years, the government has regulated the payment from Medicare and Medicaid to health care providers. Doctors are paid less than $100 for an average inpatient day. If I put you in the hospital, paid less than $100 for that. Hospitals are paid about $1,000 for an inpatient day. And they, for that $1,000, they supply all the nursing care, the medicines, and so forth. The other thing that's regulated now is insurance companies. You know, with the Affordable Care Act, they have to spend 80% of your dollars actually taking care of you, whereas they used to skim off more money than that.
Right, so now they only get to keep 20.
Guess who is not regulated?
You.
Pharmacy.
Oh, okay.
Pharmaceuticals. This is by design, as the pharmaceutical industry lobbied Congress, and Congress specifically prohibited Medicare from negotiating drug prices. We're the only country that doesn't do this, and we're paying through the teeth because our government did not do this. Drugs are countless times cheaper overseas. Again, Jane talking here. Drugs are countless times cheaper overseas and across the border. Other countries sensibly negotiate to get the best price for their patients. We do not, and we now have an unregulated part of healthcare, and the prices are rising rapidly.
Didn't this send a whole bunch? I mean, there was a whole lot of fever over a lot of that stuff back when, Minnesota was buying their drugs from Canada.
Yeah.
Because Canada does, in fact, regulate and negotiate their price.
So further, Jane referred me to an article in the Wall Street Journal back in December, how Pfizer set the cost of its new drug. It's called Ibrance. It's a breast cancer drug. It is $9,800 a month. Now, how do you get to $9,800? Well, marketing, research, no, none of that. Here's what they did. In 2013, they hired some firms to conduct hour-long interviews with 125 cancer doctors. They said, we have a drug that does this. Would you prescribe it if the price was reasonable? The doctor said yes.
Would you prescribe it if it was unreasonable?
And the doctor said no. Then they hired firms that surveyed health plan officials and pharmacists. And they said, here's the price we're thinking about for this drug. Would you use it instead of the current drugs? And once it got over $10,000 a month, the people said you'd have to fill out a bunch of paperwork for that. They didn't want that. So they're going to keep it under $10,000. Then they looked at benefits and risks and effect on insurance budgets. And they figured out that if they priced it at around $10,000 a month, everybody would have to pay 6 cents more per month for insurance, and they thought the market could stand paying 6 cents, all of us, whether we have breast cancer or not, paying 6 cents a month on our insurance more. They thought that was a pretty good deal. So they were ready. They had it set at $98.50 per month, and then right before it went to market, a competitor raised the cost of a rival drug by nearly $1,000. They thought about it. They decided they were going to lose dollars if they went up more because their market share would drop. They settled at $98.50. And on February 3rd of 2015, the FDA approved Ibrance. And within hours, pills were on their way at $9,850 a month. So their market strategy had nothing to do with their research, nothing to do with the development cost, nothing to do with any of those things. It was just how much can the market tolerate? Yeah.
How much do we think it can tolerate?
Yeah, it's a business decision, and it has nothing to do with the development cost. It's just how much we charge. So that's how the drug companies are doing it, and there's no one regulating it, no one negotiating it down. The only question is, how much are we paying for other drugs that are similar, and can we charge a little bit more for this if it does a little something different? Now, that's one level of bad. Now, entirely another level of bad is on these generic drugs.
I don't think I can take any more bad, Tony.
You know this guy, Shkreli. You've heard about him, right?
Whatever.
Yeah. The prices for 60 drugs have doubled since 2014. The prices for 20 drugs have quadrupled since 2014. And here's what's happening. There are business people buying up these old generic drugs, cornering the market, and raising the price out of sight. That's exactly...
You know, it just seems like that's some kind of a monopoly. You know, there seems to me like there ought to be a law, that there probably is a law somewhere against that.
Not yet, but by the end of the year, there will be. Right now, the House is...
Well, aren't you the bearer of good news?
There should have been a long time ago.
Matter of Trek, they should be able to go back and capture some of that money that's been, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, let's see. Scully bought this drug Daraprim, and they raised it by 50 times, up to $750 a pill. There's a place called Valiant Pharmaceuticals. Valiant bought two drugs we use all the time, Isoprel and Nitropress, raised their prices by 500% for Isoprel, 200% for Nitropress, and it's nitroglycerin. It's the stuff we use for heart attacks, and basically wrecked a lot of hospitals' pharmacy budget doing that. So I think, in view of the fact that this is a great business move to buy up a commonly used drug and jack the price, but it is not good for healthcare, I think Congress is going to finally step in and do something this year, because we are busting hospital budgets, Medicaid budgets, and individual budgets on these drugs. One public relations strategy, this is how you know these drug companies are overcharging you, is they have a very extensive patient assistance program. They guarantee that no one's going to have to pay too much out of pocket. What they're going to do is soak the insurance plan, and then they'll bonus some of their ill-gotten gain back to individual patients to keep you from squealing too loud.
Sounds pretty sick.
I think so. And what pleases me is that it's finally reached this crisis point where guys like Jane are writing about it in newspapers, while the Wall Street Journal is saying it's time to end this.
Right.
And Congress is holding hearings, and they went after Shkreli because of what he did with Daraprim, and they got him on another fraudulent thing he was doing. Basically, the man has no conscience or no soul. He just wants to make money. And we don't need that kind of people in healthcare, and we certainly don't need them in the pharmaceutical industry. At some point, and this is industry-wide, this is not their good guys and bad guys, across the board, they charge what they think the market will tolerate, not what it actually costs, not what old people could afford, but how much can we bend the market, how much can we add to everyone's healthcare cost to line our pocket.
And that just seems wrong. I mean, you know, find out what the age group or the group of people that are going to be using it can tolerate, but don't just sit around and, I mean, it's almost like we're just, you know, we're playing, you know, backgammon or chess or checkers just to see where we can, you know, what can we do? What can we get?
How much pain can we inflict?
Exactly.
And get away
with it. Where's the break point?
It's
pretty sad. I mean, you know, and it's shameful. I mean, that's when you get down to it, what they really should be doing is looking at a reasonable amount of profit, the amount they expended to get the product, the amount it takes to produce the product, and come up with a reasonable, you know, amount of profit, and try not to, you know, gouge people. I think ultimately what they're doing is they're taking advantage of really people just turning away or possibly a drug getting kind of orphaned, you know, or getting left behind.
Yeah, if there's not more than one company making it. And again, these things are so cheap that we've left it to one company to make them because there's really no profit in it. And then all of a sudden, if you can acquire that company, then you can turn a massive profit because, again, these are commonly used drugs. Very frustrating. Like I said, I think change is in the offing. I think this is not a genius business decision. It's an embarrassment to, frankly, it's embarrassment to me as a healthcare person to have to even prescribe these drugs. And yet some of them are good enough that I really have no other options. But it's a sad state we're in, and hopefully we will make some improvements this year. This would be the year. Most, if you go back to our look ahead show that we did back in January, one of the things we were looking forward to is at least the start of some form of regulation of pharmaceutical companies so they can't do this. And it's not about the science. It's not about the costs of developing the drug. A lot of those costs, in fact, we are bearing as taxpayers because these drugs are being developed at university labs with government grants. And then these people take them over, and then they soak us again on the backside by jacking up the price after the scientific work has been done. It is not about the science. It's simply about how much money they think the market can tolerate. And unfortunately, and this is a ripple effect, when we expanded insurances under the Affordable Care Act, we created a market that would tolerate a lot more pain than we had before when people were buying their insurance privately. So there, I feel better. I've spouted off about caucuses, and I've spouted about drug prices.
You drug me into a drug talk, and you know how I can't stand talking about medicines.
Yeah, I understand.
There's no, I don't know.
Okay, well, here, let me just, I'm going to go off script here, and I'm going to talk about something that I know you want to talk about, Super Bowl.
It is, in fact, coming up, yes.
Yes, the Super Bowl is, in fact, coming up. Now, there was a report, and I don't even have it with me. I just read this thing, and I thought, I'll file this back, but I'm feeling sorry for Rick, so I'm going to go ahead and spill this now. Super Bowl, it turns out, if your football team is in the Super Bowl, if you track influenza rates in the region, in that team's market area, the rates of influenza influenza visits to the emergency room go up when your team makes the Super Bowl.
How is that?
Well, the theory is...
You want to make sure that you aren't sick for the party?
No, the theory is you have the party. Whereas Super Bowl market areas are having parties for the Super Bowl, the rest of us are watching it on TV out of the corner of our eye while we do something else. So they get together when we don't. There is no earthly reason to get together in February.
I don't know, though, Tony. I know lots of people, even our church to some extent, will have a Super Bowl party. We'll all get together and watch the first half. Now, I will say one thing. That's how you know you're old, is when you quit watching the second half of the Super Bowl.
This is your theory.
That's it. You know it. I mean, you know, when you're young, you watch the whole thing all the way through, and then, yeah, there was a point where I quit watching it. I watched the best commercials are over at halftime.
I've seen some football.
And then usually the game, for the most part, is over by then.
It gets a little dull.
And then we just have to do it.
And you just wander off.
This is Super Bowl 50, too. So now, I heard an interesting, or somebody was telling me.
There we go. Now, do you see how he engages again? This is great. All right,
well,
go
ahead. Because we're not talking about drugs.
I understand.
But have you heard the story about the guy holding the VHS tape of Super Bowl I?
No.
So it turns out NFL Films doesn't actually have a copy of Super Bowl I. I don't know if recording technology escaped them back then, but they actually cannot ever show a re-airing of Super Bowl I. They don't have the tape. Some guy's dad made a copy on VHS of the original recording. This he passed on. He left it to his kid. His kid took it, had it digitally remastered and perfected, and tried to sell it to the NFL for $1 million. They offered him $35,000.
He should work for a pharmaceutical company.
Something like that. Well, the funny thing is then he went to the network and said, "Hey, I got this tape." And they said, "Well, until the NFL gives us permission, we can't air their content." So there's a stalemate going on right now between these two. It's going to be interesting to see how it turns out. But one way or the other, we may actually get to see Super Bowl I.
And at that time, it was nothing. I bet you it wouldn't even make a blip in the influenza data.
No.
Super Bowl I. But now, you're right, it's a ritual. It surprised me, and it may be that this data is older, and now, it's no longer applicable.
I think it's just a gathering of people.
Sure, but I'm going to take your point, and I'm going to say, well, most everybody has, you know, what do you do in February? Okay, Valentine's Day and Super Bowl.
Right.
So those are the two social events.
Frankly, we didn't do anything for Groundhog Day, did we?
I love Groundhog Day.
But we didn't do anything.
I know, but I don't have to buy anybody flowers. I don't have to buy gifts. I don't eat too much.
But that little sucker
Groundhog
can cause us 6 more weeks
holiday.
Of winter.
I know, but so can the Iowa. I mean, let's face it, Groundhog Day is the nature equivalent of the Iowa caucuses.
Next year, the groundhog's going to come out and flip a coin.
And he's going to announce there's a 49.6% chance of winter. Thank God it's not 49.9.
I'm just going to let you ponder that one over the break.
You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. We flipped a coin. It's time to start the third and final factual portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Health Matters Caucus Show.
It was a close one.
It is our chance to make fun of everything, but specifically the Iowa caucuses this week. We'll think of something else to make fun of next week.
But you have to admit, choosing a presidential candidate through coin toss.
Get some machines, record the votes. Let's put some numbers on this
thing. Is that actually worse than somebody getting elected by electoral vote and not having the popular vote? Isn't it kind of weird like that? It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, it's
just odd.
Obviously, the will of the people is not any clearer than it was before the caucuses, in my mind. Our sponsor, Cough Management, let's nail that coughing before it gets worse. Coughs lasting more than 3 weeks are caused by 1, upper airway cough syndrome, previously known as postnasal drip, 2, asthma, 3, non-asthmatic bronchitis, which is usually an allergic condition, and 4, gastroesophageal reflux disease or acid reflux. And the only way the way we diagnose that is other causes have been ruled out, and we attribute it to that and try some anti-acid therapy. Treatment first-generation antihistamines. The old, sleepy, drowsy, not in any way clear antihistamines are the ones that you want. And I mentioned a couple of them. Benadryl or diphenhydramine is one that's most commonly used and mixed in all these cough and cold syrups, including our favorite Vicks NyQuil, the manly cough syrup that the achy, sniffling, sneezing, why the hell is the room spinning? Why am I on the floor? Medicine for
it's never put you
cold.
On the floor, has it?
I slept when I took it in college, and I slept through my first class the next day. I learned.
Were you
that
in
that
class when you were sleeping,
out.
Or did you actually like
no,
in
no?
Bed
I
sleeping?
Mean, I mean, I woke up, and I never did that before. I woke up, and it was too late.
See, I just love that.
I know you do.
It's the one thing that makes you feel good.
Well, and I'm interesting enough. We have fought over that. I mean, in general, I don't like multi-drug, multi-symptom things, but it has the right stuff in it.
I think at this point, you could take colored syrup that was a placebo and give it to me like that, and I would probably still sleep better just thinking that it was NyQuil.
I bet so. As a matter of fact, again, placebo response has been as high as 85% in some of the research
trials.
But you
got to make the placebo have that nice licorice taste to it.
Yeah, throw a little alcohol in, you'll be fine. The second generation antihistamines, these are the ones that leave you Claritin clear, are not as good. Add a decongestant like pseudoephedrine, and that's a good cough medicine. One research trial, not so sure about this, indicated that naproxen, that's Aleve, may be effective for cough. It might be worth a try if you're having a difficult cough. Again, the guaifenesin that's in Robitussin, there's just simply no way that stuff can work. It on the surface, it cannot go to your stomach and then do anything for your cough. It just can't. Dextromethorphan and codeine, they at least make you sleepy, and they're marketed as cough suppressants, not terribly effective, particularly not in kids. The American Academy of Pediatrics stated that over-the-counter cough and cold medicines are not effective for children younger than age 6, and you may remember a few years ago, very young children got in serious trouble on those medicines. It's just not a good idea. And one final thing for our third and final fractional portion, if you have a cough due to those blood pressure medicines, we call them ACE inhibitors, they're drugs that end in the word pril. That's captopril, enalapril, lisinopril, ramipril. Those medicines can cause you to cough. Sometimes you switch brands and you get better about 30% of the time. I did not know this until I read this. Some doctors also may not know it. So you can sometimes switch the ACE inhibitor. They're very good blood pressure medicines, but they can lead to a cough. That's our sponsor, Cough Management. Let's nail that coughing before it gets worse. Rick, I'm going to tell you about something that makes me very excited. It's called CRISPR gene therapy. CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R.
Is that like the drawer in my refrigerator? They call it the CRISPR drawer?
That's right. And if you put stuff in the drawer in your refrigerator, it will be genetically modified when it comes out.
Depends on how long you leave it there, Tony. I've seen stuff that came out of that drawer that weren't very crisp.
Well, let me tell you how cool this is. This is.
You mean like temperature?
No, thank you. You're still in your refrigerator, but I'm coming out of your refrigerator, and I am talking about the researchers that were doing genetic work on bacteria back in the 1980s.
Okay.
All right.
You remember back then, don't you?
Yeah, this is yes, I am eligible for the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute meeting on Thursday at 1 p.m., but that's beside the point. Hey, by the way, we can sure tell who's derailing the show. If we look at the trajectory of the show, when the show gets knocked off trajectory, when the show is in the ditch, we can run the tape backwards. We have access to the tape. We can run the tape backwards. We can see who put the show in the ditch.
Tony,
and I think
I hate to tell you this, it's as close as a coin flip on this one.
Back to the bacteria. Back in the 1980s, there was a really odd pattern in bacterial DNA. There was one sequence that was repeated over and over again.
Was it like a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man?
They showed it was clustered. They named it clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats, and the acronym is CRISPR. So they had this thing. When you look at the DNA, these things kept repeating, repeating, repeating. What is that DNA? We didn't know what it was used for, right?
But they named my refrigerator drawer after it?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
I know. And in between those repeated CRISPRs were little segments of DNA, and they figured out it was viral DNA. It was like a photographic DNA gallery of all the viruses this bacteria had seen with these little frames, these CRISPR frames around them in the DNA.
What? Wow.
What is that? Next to it was something called Cas9, and Cas9 is genetically a pair of scissors. That's what it is.
So it cuts things.
It cuts DNA.
Nice.
Yes. And So think about, you've got viral DNA pictures next to a pair of scissors. So next time the virus attacks this bacteria, it releases the viral DNA with the scissors. It latches on to the actual virus, and it snips the hell out of it.
This sounds like a movie, a horror movie.
Yeah. You've got this pair of scissors with your, it basically, it's got your name on it, and it's going to stick to you and snip you up. If you're a virus, this is your worst nightmare.
Right.
All right. But if you're a scientist,
it's cool.
It's very cool, because now you have a pair of scissors that you can pick a gene and cut it out.
Nice.
And so they are now, and every lab that's doing genetics is using CRISPR, and CRISPR is the way we're going to make changes. You can imagine, if you have a gene that leads to birth defects, if you have a gene that leads to a lung disease, a rare inherited disease of your metabolism, and we have a pair of scissors with that gene's name on it, we can go cut that thing out.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. It's scary, too, right?
Well, it is scary, yeah.
Because sure, we could cut out the gene that makes you ugly.
Well, that might be good. And now, the question is, would I just all of a sudden not be ugly, or would I all of a sudden just be pretty? Answer that.
I'm sorry. This is my mind melting, thinking about you being pretty. I don't know how that would happen, but we could make your kids pretty. Your kids are reasonably pretty. I'm not saying that.
I'm telling them you said that, because they're not listening.
We could slice the Rick out of your kids.
Oof.
Yeah. Now, think about that, obviously. There's some bad things that could happen if you start basically designing the kids. You put genes in, you cut genes out. You can, and that's where it gets scary.
But I'll tell you what, I do, I have put stuff in that drawer in the refrigerator, and some pretty nasty genetic things come out of there if you leave it in there too long.
Right. Nothing gets pretty in your refrigerator drawer. But this right here, you could design, you could basically put genes in to make a tall baby with a certain, you could do all this stuff with this CRISPR. So it's scary. And the reason,
it's Frankenstein.
The reason I'm mentioning it now is actually over in the United Kingdom, a regulator is approved. Now, they still got some other lines of ethics they've got to go through. A stem cell scientist is going to use the CRISPR-Cas9 to modify human embryos for research purposes. Now, what they're going to do is they're going to carve some genes out of them, one, to see if they can do it, also to see what happens to the development after they do that, and then they're going to trash the embryos. So, these are embryos that are left over from a fertilization clinic. So, if that
they're
bothers
not,
you,
yeah,
you know,
they're not.
They're viable embryos.
But they're not fertilized.
They're not fertilized.
It's unknown.
This would make a lot of people mad.
They're not doing this in the U.S.
They're not doing this in the U.S. But they are doing it in Great Britain, in the United Kingdom. And spare embryos from fertilization clinic, they're not going to be implanted. They would require consent of the donors. They would destroy them within a week of fertilization, so they will be fertilized. And they're going to cut the genes out, and they're going to see what happens when they do that to these embryos. So this is, again, this is either the end of the world, or this is the research that is going to save us from some of these horrific genetic diseases going forward. I think my point to our Health Matters Radio fans is, if you see an article about CRISPR, CRISPR, I want you to know it is a pair of genetic scissors that can do things that nothing we've ever had could do before in terms of DNA research. It can be the savior of kids who have horrible diseases that they had no business getting in the first place. It could lead to horrible things. That's the way science is in general, right?
Right.
It's across the board. It is exciting for me. The science of it is amazing, frankly. Keep in mind that what we're using, and this is the interesting thing about it, this was not developed in some lab. This was found on living bacteria. They already had the CRISPR.
Wow.
And what we do is we just put different pictures on it, and it goes and does different things. But the actual mechanism, all of this, was a bacterial defense mechanism against viral invasion.
Pretty amazing stuff, Tony. I mean, it's very, to be 80s, it's kind of out there.
Yeah, it is. And the thing was, they didn't know what they had for a long time.
Right, right.
Just wonder what this is. And then we have gotten to the point now, our level of genetic sophistication is enough that we recognize the viral DNA and we can look at it mechanistically.
So what trait are you going to have them cut out of you?
I think I'm going to do something about my selection of friends. I need better judgment. I need to cut out the part of my brain that makes bad judgments.
Well, you could go that route, or you could, you could take the high road and do something, honest, like, eyesight or something like that. I mean, but if you want to get down in the mud and do that other thing, you can do that too.
You wouldn't offend anybody. Okay. All right. Well, you've been antagonizing me the whole show.
Let's face it, I came here
to do a radio show, thought that we would be talking about the caucuses, and cannot seem to stay on conversation. conversation. But it's a good question. And you know, all right, so theoretically, I guess what would, here's the thing, you know, what we're talking about is reverse engineering me. You could, there are sometimes if I lack a gene that I need to clear infection or something like that, you could probably cut and paste that into me so that I could do that. You can't change who I am, you know, my height or anything like that at my age. That wouldn't work. But going forward, and this is the scary thing, you know, it's a whole different thing. If you have one person, you try this on one person. But when you're trying it on embryos, you're basically changing the genes that will be passed down.
Right.
What would I pass down to my kids? I'll tell you, my son would like to be taller. He is very disappointed. My wife and I are short. He likes to play basketball, and he is very disappointed at that.
Yeah, but I think, well, there's another whole show on that topic. But, you know, something tells me if he had a choice of either or, I'm not sure that choice would be there. But if he had all of the above, then maybe that's the case. But, you know, I suspect, we all know your son's an extremely, I mean, he's brilliant. So I don't think that he would give up.
You don't think he'd go for the taller?
I don't think there's any amount of playing in the NBA but that would make him want to give up that brilliance. But nonetheless.
And the thing was, keep in mind, this was the last time we talked, which was before he went through puberty. So it's been a long time.
Yeah. But you need to tell Harrison that there does come a time in every man's life when he has to accept the fact that he is never going to play in the NBA.
And there comes a time in everyone's life when they realize they're turning into their father or they're turning into their mother. And it's,
well, I wouldn't say that to him personally. That's on you.
Yeah, it's a very uneasy time. Speaking of viral invaders, I got to do this.
So we're done. We're done genetic modifying.
Yeah. Watch for CRISPR. It's called CRISPR-Cas9. It's commonly being used in the labs anyway, but it's poised to really make a difference in healthcare, possibly in the next year. This is Nobel Prize stuff. This is clearly Nobel Prize stuff. No doubt about it. This was from New Scientist, and I just, you know, we're talking about that Zika virus, and I decided not to put anything specific because, my goodness, the networks are going nuts over this.
Right.
But I did want to point out, this is from New Scientist. Here we go, another obscure virus that shoots to global notoriety. So we had HIV, we had Ebola, we had SARS, we had West Nile, we had MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Virus, we had dengue, we had chikungunya.
And it's hard to top that last one, let's be honest.
Chikungunya is wonderful. Rick's already got his spoon out. He always gets a spoon out when I say chikungunya. But this is what they said. I'm reading them word for word. Given how often we find ourselves in this situation and the near certainty we will find ourselves in it again, you would think that the public health response would be a well-oiled machine by now. But yet again, we've been blindsided by another virus. The recommendations right now in Brazil are don't get pregnant. That's the response to the Zika virus. And it's just, you know,
Tony, I can live by that. Can you?
Not getting pregnant?
Yeah, we're good. I'm good.
But this is a virus that it's been around for a long time in Africa. It was really
Tony,
not that virulent.
Let's be honest. I mean, we're never going to get rid of viruses. They're going to be around the rest of our lives. Humanity is going to have viruses.
But with our population density and our travel, these things will spread to a place they haven't been, and they can infect millions, and they can wreak havoc, and we have to have some way to address them.
And we slowly build those each time around. But as the society grows, I mean, as the world gets smaller, so to speak, and people start mixing, right? I mean, at some point, we're going to get exposed to a higher percentage of all the world's viruses as they're going to get exposed to our viruses. And at some point, I mean, it may take hundreds and hundreds of years, but at some point you would think that we would all have the same pool of viruses to deal with.
I hear you, but at the same time, at some point you would think that the wind would stop blowing because it all reaches equilibrium. My thinking is there are going to be mutations, there are going to be changes, and so we'll never reach that point that you're asking.
You think they'll always be regionalized, and then at some point that regionalization will always have to find its way out of the region.
Okay, I have to think about that.
Okay, I'm going to give you your little, I flipped a coin, it's heads for you this time.
Okay.
That's it, so I'll let you win that battle.
And you think I'm just going to accept that the coin was heads? I don't know that the coin was heads. I never saw you flip the coin.
49.9999% of the time it is.
Yeah, and 49.6 it's not, and so I can live with that. Apparently you win, at least according to the Democratic Party. Who knows? Can you please get us off the air?
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Hunter Reese and to Eric Bilby, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to our show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show, and please enjoy this dramatic reenactment of internal emails from Turing Pharmaceuticals as captured by the House Subcommittee.
Health Matters will be huge. We raised the price of our show from $1,700 to $75,000. Almost all of it is profit, and I think we'll get 3 years of that or more. Should be a very handsome investment for all of us.
Another month, another $7.2 million. Bam!
Our listeners may react to the price increase. We still come out ahead if we can frame this issue as a fight between the radio show and the insurance companies. As long as everyone who wants Health Matters can get it, the community should have no issue.
Guys, we need to take some action steps now. If a station like WMKY is having issues, we are in trouble.
Is there a price reduction commitment that would discourage other shows entering the market? What if we headlined, Health Matters commits to low out-of-the-pocket costs for our listeners?
I don't think so. I think it's best we don't PR something like that unless we're willing to commit to actually doing it.
As early as next week, the board should remove Weaver as host.
Whew.
The price drop for Health Matters has to be significant. This cannot be seen as something that appears to be as arbitrary as the price hike in the first place.
Well, whatever you do, and I promise, word for word, those are the emails from the pharmaceutical company. Whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week as we remind you that a primary is the place to start a political career or the place to start a cancer on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.